On ABC Radio,
this is The Big Fish
with Scott Levi.
Big Fish. And every now and then we have to talk about the monster that didn't get away, a program called The Big Fish. It'd be false advertising if we didn't feature big fish from time to time. How's a 29-kilo barramundi? Is that big enough for you? It certainly was for Joe Starling, who nearly fainted under the weight of it before releasing it gently. I think it released you gently, Joe. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Yes.
I've almost caught my breath.
Yeah, you nearly passed out for that just brief moment. And we'll put the picture up on our podcast, the Big Fish podcast site, the ABC Listen app, because it really is a beautiful, glistening, silvery monster of a beast. Where did it come from?
It came from Lake Maraboon, which I find really hard to remember, but I've realised that if I swap the consonants around, it's Lake Barramoon. So that was all time, was all about the moon, and it was all about the Barab. So, yeah, Lake Maraboon, which is, I guess, the recreational name of Fairbairn Dam in Queensland near Emerald.
Yeah, right. So it's the backed up waters of Fairbairn Dam. It was damn big, that's all I can say. But an incredible YouTube clip on your partner Steve's channel about how this came about. And it really disproved the theory that this side scan sonar, the new fish finding devices, which show you the underwater profile of everything down there, that they aren't a recipe for catching every fish. In fact, it was sort of the reverse. It showed you all the fish you couldn't catch, didn't it?
It sure did. So it's the forward-facing sonar, they call it these days. And, there are so many naysayers who say it's ruined fishing and it's not fishing anymore when you do that. And it's like shooting fish in a barrel. It makes it too easy. It's cheating. You know, we've all read the comments many of us sort of wonder if we've never done it. Wonder, is it true? It certainly looks like it should be, because most people only ever show you the results, right? Not the effort. And so, you know, I can forgive these people who've never tried it from feeling like that's just taken away the skill and all of those elements that keep us coming back to fishing all the time. But I am here to tell you, and I'm sure anyone who's watched that YouTube video that Steve put together, it's just not true. Anyone who is saying that hasn't had a crack at it yet.
It's amazing how the fish that are that huge, that they can levitate, jump out of the water. Inspiring stuff, isn't it? They're monsters.
It sure is. And I'm not sure how often you get to see my face just watch in awe as that fish completely clears the water. It jumped three or four times through the fight, despite best efforts and all of those things. You know what we always do, try and
drop the rod tip and all that, but it doesn't work when barra want to jump. And I think that's probably one of their great attributes. But this lake's full of them. There's hundreds and hundreds of them. So if anyone wants to go up there, they can have a crack, but give yourself a month or so, I reckon.
Yeah, well, that's right. And for those that are saying, oh, but I haven't got forward-facing sonar, so what's the point? The local kids, you got to get wired in. The fish there are incredibly tuned in, believe it or not, to tide times. and even though they're nowhere near the salt, and the moon rise and set, and sunset and sunrise, and also all the solanine tables. So they don't like hull slap. So if you're fishing from the shore, you don't have to worry about that. And the local kids and the locals that live there catch these things off the shore. And so you don't need to have the forward-facing sonar, but for the fish that are the one that ones that we were marking, we're just out in the middle of nowhere. We were on board with Dean Sylvester, and he scoped that dam, and he's gone over. There's loads and loads of standing timber and everything. Of course, every barra fisher just expects that, well, they're going to orientate to the timber. So we scanned all of that. They are not there. They are just sitting out in the middle of nowhere. So without the any form of technology, you're not going to find them. Or you'll find them, but they're not going to be where you expect them to be. And then you've got to find what depth they're sitting at. So that's all about, there was a definite thermocline. And then, like you said, you quickly see by watching that video that there are loads and loads of targets. They are just everywhere. But as many hundreds or hundreds as of barra there are around you at any given time, there are 1,000 times that in Boney Brim. So they are really well fed, and you've got to trigger them. And if you are just dragging a lure around or casting blindly, you'd be exhausted. So it certainly does help. But I'm here to say now, it just because you've got a forward-facing sonar does not mean that your fishing's easy, because that was extremely challenging. And it was like, I actually wrote a song for Dean to celebrate my time on board with him. And I wrote it before I actually caught the fish. But it was 2 days of spending time on board with him, and him telling us, cast over there, too far left, no, too far. And then so the other one would cast, no, too far right, cut, bring it in, quick, 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 slow down, no, slow, stop, no, don't stop. And it was just, oh, doing your head in, and what screen are you looking at? And so to get it right, what we had to do was have a look at where the handle of the pole was facing the
The
pole.
transducer for
If
the
they
forward-facing sonar.
forward facing, because they can turn that around, right? That's mounted onto a pole so that you can search. So have a look at the way the handle's pointing, cast in that direction. So you're looking out to where you're casting before the lure even hits the water. You must bring your eyes to, he has two screens. The top screen is forward facing, the bottom screen is downscan. So you bring it to the top screen so that you can try and work out what bright smudge on the screen is your lure landing, not bait or a barra. And once you find that, then you make your adjustments as to where you're going to wind it back to try and get close to the barra that you've decided that you're targeting. So then you're following that, and as it gets closer, you've got to remember to now drop your eyes to the bottom screen so that you can work out what height your lure is at. And if you're too high, you can slow it down so it comes down near it. But if you're underneath the barra, if you've let it drop down too far, well, you haven't got a hope in hell anyway.
The thing that I think it's a bit like is having a hole in one in golf, because you're almost guiding the lure into its mouth. Luck of the game, and how many times you pull that lure right past its gob and get one that goes reaction bite or whatever. I think I might have a little morsel now, even though I'm grossly overweight. I'll have that after dinner mint and go whooshka.
Oh, there's more to it even than that, Scott, because when you're watching it on the down scan, if there's no reaction whatsoever from the blob that you're looking at, you can do what they call, what he was calling a pop your lure. And the thing is that you can't whack your rod because it yanks it out of the way. You've got to sort of drop the slack and then whack the slack at the same time to just make the lure, because we're fishing with, well, I caught mine on it's a jig fly, big
Yeah,
jig fly.
they're interesting, aren't they? With a big jig head, and then it's got sort of a giant
Fly.
fly material behind. Is that to represent the Boney Brim?
Yeah, I think so. And so when you do the sudden pop of the line, it just makes the feathers sort of flare without jerking it away from the fish. And if you get that wrong, or you touch the barra, or you do the wrong thing, the barra just takes off. Or if you do what I always did, which was yank it, you know, instead of drop it, giving it a little bit of slack and then popping that slack, I'd just lift the rod tip and the fly would jump right out of the way and the fish would just go, yeah, nut, and take off.
Yeah, there's one
But
that's
then if
got
you,
away, yeah.
yeah, so sometimes the pop would work, sometimes it wouldn't, sometimes, you know, and so every single barra had a different mood, and more often than not, it was just disinterested. And then you might be able to entice them to follow, and that gets exciting because then you can see the big thing shimmering like predator. Sometimes it's in the beam, sometimes it's
Yeah.
not, you know, behind your lure coming up that thing. And if you go too slow, it'll get disinterested. If you go too fast, it'll be disinterested. You've got to read its mood. And then it would get to just near the boat and go, oh, nah. And that peel off again was like so infuriating.
The incentive is that you can hook one over 30 kilos, can't you? That's a
Absolutely.
real possibility. Yours was, well, how big was yours? Take us through the fight. We're speaking to Joe Starling, who's just back from Fairburn Dam, chasing the massive barramundi there. It's a legendary destination for huge barramundi, and we're talking about these massive barrel-shaped fish that are record breakers, and there's lots and lots of them, but they don't get that big for no reason. They've got so much food that your lure is take it or leave it. But
Absolutely.
to tell us about the one that you caught and that fight, and you almost fainting under its weight.
The fight itself, I've got to say, all the meter plus barra, because this is, believe it or not, this is my first landed meter plus barra. So I've got the monkey off my back. But for decades, I've had a barra monkey on my back. And so I've had at least five huge fish on, and I've managed to drop every single one of them due to angler error. So I was being coached through that fight by every one of those fish, because if anyone's like me and they've dropped a whopper and you know it's your fault, you post-mortemise that error, that mistake, over and over and over again. And these fish have been haunting me for decades. And so each one of them, thankfully, popped up at the same time where I'd stuffed it up the fight in a previous battle with a different fish and coached me. So it was like, right now, I remember at this point in time, I have to do that. So, of course, I've got the boys on board chirping away, but I wasn't listening to a word they said because I had barramundi in my head telling me where I needed to go. So I was actually really calm because I had the best coaches in the world, or my drop barra. There are so many times in there that you can just see, where if you watch the video, you can see me just admire the fish as it comes out of the water. I'm in just total awe, but also got a barramundi on my shoulder telling me, lean your rod, keep the rod that way. And it was just amazing. Like, it was probably as close to a spiritual experience that a fisher like me could ever have. It was wonderful.
And
And
that
then when
guide's got a system where he can weigh them without lifting them by the gills or whatnot, putting them in
I
this
know,
special
how
giant
good is that?
soft wet sling thing. And so
Yes.
you take them to shore and you revive them and off they go, none the worse for wear. And I guess that single hook jig pattern you're using too would leave very little impact on the fish.
Absolutely. It was so respectful and so well sorted out. So we came away on this trip, Steve, and I bought the calibrated scales because we were chasing a women's world record. That's what we wanted to do.
And you had
And
10 kilo line, which is that quite light for this water? Because the
yes.
water is quite turbid. I don't think heavier line would be
Bitter.
a problem.
No, it wouldn't be. Particular world record, the line class that we had identified that would be the easiest for me to break was a 17 kilo fish on 10 kilo line, which was the standing and currently is the standing world record while mine is pending. That's by a wonderful woman up in Tinaroo, who's got a number of kraken fish. And
that's the one up on the Atherton Tablelands, isn't it? Which has was one of the first sort of giant trophy barramundi waters. Yeah.
Yeah, and how is this? She landed her fish on November the 4th, 9 years before I landed mine on November the 5th.
Wow, that's amazing. So you had the properly calibrated scales. You've got the proper, rated line that's tested, pre-tested. So it's going to be exactly 10 kilos or a little under, actually, usually, aren't they? And then,
Then you have to weigh the fish on solid land. You can't have it on a boat because obviously any slap is going to bounce the scales. The IGFA world record books have the rules in them. So there's a maximum length of bite tippet that you can have. There's a minimum length of your 10 kilo. There's a maximum length of leader between your top leader knot and the hooks of the fly. There's all sorts of rules that you have to make sure. So you can't just go out there, catch a big fish and go, cool, I'm going to submit that for a world record, because you've got to be compliant with the regulations. So that's why I'm saying we went out to achieve this goal and we made sure we had everything on there. But you're absolutely right about Dean Sling. So he looked into it for us because we said this is what we're going to do. And he found these slings and imported that one from Europe, and they use it for all your big pike and everything like that over in Europe. But what a magnificent thing, because you could zip the fish into the sling and put it back in the water while you at one of us. So I was sitting there holding my fish in the bag, so you're not touching the slime coat, and it's got all the water coming through its gills. It's having a rest while the boys went and set up the weighing tripod with the scales and everything. And then we only took it out of the water to measure it, because we had to do a length and a girth measurement. So it was 119, was almost 120 long, but you can't round up. So 119 centimetres long for the record, and 88 centimetres girth.
That's a phenomenal girth, isn't it? An 88 centimetre barra on its own is a huge fish. But how big do they get in there? Because he's caught bigger ones than that, hasn't he, Dean?
He has, Dean. I think he's up over a metre 40. I'm not sure.
Let us know about the record. We've got this beautiful song to play, and you're going to tell us about a big event for women in fishing. Of course, Jo Starling is the founder of the Women's Recreational Fishing League, and you hear plenty of the members as guests on The Big Fish. But Jo wrote this song. It's called Like the Moon, We Shift the Tide on The Big Fish. We'll give it its debut on air, and then we'll come back and talk about a big event that's open to all women to have a crack at becoming better anglers.
Step up to the water's edge, feel the pull, take the pledge. Like the moon, we shift the tide, strong and steady, arms open wide. We are women, water, leading now for our daughters.
That's beautiful, Joe, and it's all to lure women along to the Women's Recreational Fishing League to join the national movement and become part of the leadership forum. I believe New South Wales DPI Fisheries have got right behind it as well. where and when and how do they register?
Oh, excellent. Thank you. Well, so the Fisher Leadership Forum is we're supported by Ausfish Unlimited and the Rec Fishing Trust Funds of New South Wales. So thank you to everyone who participates by having a licence. It's good to know that our licence funds are going to really positive programs. So this one is about ensuring that we can upskill women throughout New South Wales on all the waterways to step up as leaders, and whether that be through being influential online or in their communities, whether it's about training them to run sustainable and compliant tournaments or fishing comps, or whether it's about running clinics and doing that effectively as an adult trainer, or even just considering recreational fishing as a career in some way. The forum is a two-day forum. It's free to attend for registered people. We even have 8 bursaries that have all been allocated now to help make sure that we've got people, all the regions represented. So 8 wonderful women have received bursaries to be flown in and accommodated as well. So what it means to me and why it's exciting to me is it means that we will have more women in visible roles in recreational fishing, whether it be simply stepping up further in their local fishing club or coming up with community initiatives or understanding the need for habitat restoration and leading that in their area. Or indeed being there for WRFL even to help us take our fabulous initiatives like our X Factor tournaments or any of the other clinics that we run out into the regions, because we need more people. We can't just have the same 3 people or the same leadership teams running these events all the time, or too many people miss out. So the Fisher Leadership Forum, they can jump onto the WRFL website and find out more there, or on our Facebook or even Instagram. Look us up, look for the Fisher Leadership Forum. The registration form is really easy. Like I said, it's 2 days of personal and professional upskilling that they don't have to pay for except for their accommodation and getting to Newcastle for the 14th and 15th of March. So we've got about 35 spots left. So I hope that we can inspire a few more women, or certainly get the men who think that it'd be great for their friends, their female friends or family to gain a little bit more confidence, come along to the Leadership Forum and meet the wonderful Kendall Kramer and Karen Van Bale, myself, Cassie Price, Emma Simpson, all these fabulous leaders in recreational fishing who are there to invest their time, knowledge and skills into those who want to step forward. So this is about getting more women treading the path to leadership, and we're prepared to invest some money.
Excellent, Jo. Thanks for joining us again on The Big Fish. Good luck with that impending 10-kilo line world record, a 29-kilo barramundi out of Fairburn. What's the lake called?
Maraboon.
Moon Barra. Maraboon.
Maraboon.
Moonbarra. And also crawling with these giant red claw crayfish, which are a little bit of a pest. You can catch as many as you like to get the balance right. And just an amazing place to visit. I'm sure a lot of people will go and give it a go, but don't think it's easy. Tight lines, Jo.
Tight lines to you. Jo's, see you guys.
Jo Starling there on The Big Fish. And that big event, the Fish Her Leadership Forum, a 2-day high-impact event dedicated to fostering female leadership across the recreational fishing sector, is coming up March next year in Newcastle from the 14th to the 15th of March. And if you'd like to know more, just jump online at the Women's Recreational Fishing League website. Applications close on the 16th of January 2026, unless the available spots are filled sooner.
On ABC Radio, it's The Big Fish with Scott Levi.
Coming up, stinker on whiting fishing along our beautiful beaches. They've moved in. those lovely silvery fish that are so good on the chew. And Stephen Gaynor, the fly boy from the flyboat on Sydney Harbour, with his thoughts on social media, giving them a broadside, and also what's biting in that beautiful waterway right on the doorstep of Australia's best city.
This is The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Here comes Stinker with his fishing tips, some hot advice for your fishing trip. Where to find him? What's the bait?
Are you catching any, mate?
Stinker, you son of a beach, how are you?
Hey, good, good. Oh, gee, what a wonderful week we've had. The sun's been out. It's just beautiful and just everything as it should be. And I think I'm in the family of coming. It's quite exciting. The whole thing's very exciting.
It is indeed. And the beaches are looking pristine. And we were sitting on Broughton Island looking across at the mainland and thinking about the miles and miles, kilometres of beaches to explore from Seal Rocks all the way down to Newcastle. It's quite extraordinary, isn't it? If you want to fish the beach, boy, you wouldn't do it in a lifetime, would you?
Oh, you'd wonder where. I mean, you need to know how to read a beach because there are so many kilometres. You just can't pull up and say, I'm going to fish here. You've got to look into the deeper holes where there's a bit of action, a bit of wave action. But just forgetting fishing for a little while, if you went to Tea Garden, then you went across the Singing Bridge to Hawk's Nest, then to the surf club at Hawk's Nest, and then you hit the beach. Now, when you hit the beach at Hawk's Nest, you've got a fair way to travel, and you head north along the beach, and there's some great fishing till you get to the Little Gibber. But now there's a road that was built by the mining companies way back, and so you can stick to the road, which is all surf, tar surface, and it goes for quite a distance with the mile lakes on your left and all the ocean and the beach on your right. And so you motor along there until you come to a little ferry. And this little ferry you can drive on, and that will take you across a part of the Myall Lake to Legg's Camp. And then from there, you can either go to Bulladealer or Seal Rocks or all stops north. It's worth a ride just to have a look. And if you get sick of the car, pull up on the side of the road and then walk over the sand dune. Oh, dear, you're going to see the most beautiful sight from Seal Rocks right through to Fingal Bay, probably.
And on to beach fishing, and Laurie Chatter, who was on the show last week, who you introduced us to, a wonderful, wonderful fisherman. He loves driving Stockton Beach when the whiting come on. And a lot of the great beach fishermen, and another one we speak to often is Alex Bellissimo, who walks the northern beaches of Sydney, they move a lot. I'm a pretty sedentary beach fisherman. I'll get a long neck or two and park the chair and just watch the rod and not worry too much. But if you really want to catch fish, these good fishermen, a good beach fisherman, reckon you should keep moving. If they're not in that gutter, go to the next gutter and the next gutter. And tell you what, there are limitless gutters on that Mungo beach stretch, Stinker.
Oh, Mungo, yeah, you go all the way. It's just remarkable treachery right through to Seal Rocks. But getting back onto beach fishing, it's not complicated. In fact, I would encourage everyone to forget all about rock fishing this Christmas. Give it a miss. Because if the best way to avoid rock fishing tragedy is not to go rock fishing, give it a miss. And don't ever, whatever you do, take the kids rock fishing. It's not a place for kids to go rock fishing. If you do have to go for some unknown reason, put a life jacket on, and because you've got more chance on the surface than you have underneath it. So get a life jacket if you have to. But my suggestion is to stick with the beach. And we've got some beautiful beaches here, Scott. Absolutely beautiful beaches, starting with Stockton Beach, which is the first beach north of the Hunter River. And the Stockton Breakwall on the northern side of the Hunter River is great fishing, particularly for mulloway. Oh, gee, they catch some mulloway off that beach. But there's an old mate of mine who fishes more regularly than any other, on Stockton Beach. Now, he's got the game sewn up. He just drives along the beach until he finds what he calls a fishable hole. Now, he reckons if there's any fish on the beach, they're going to be there. So what he does, he pulls up his old truck, old rusty truck full of sand it is, when there's no holes. Luckily, he's got holes in it, so the sand sort of... Oh,
it's like a cheese grater, like a colander.
It is. So he then got a deck chair, and he puts the deck chair out. He puts the white pipes, drives two white pipes into the sand about 10 metres apart, and then he's got his two rods. He's got his worms and pippies. He got two hooks on each hook. That means he's got four chances of catching a fish. He puts a worm and a pippy on one, and a worm and a pippy on the other, and then he throws them both out, and they're pretty solid lead, so they're not going to go with the current. They're going to sit in the sand, and that's that. Well, he catches more fish along Stockton Beach than others, and he doesn't move. He just looks at a place, and he says, if there's any fish on this beach, that's where they're going to be. And so he plonks himself down there, and I don't think he's ever come off the beach without having a beautiful catch. He normally gets whiting and brim. They're what he catches more than anything else. And a brim off the beach, I mean, I don't like brim. I'm never real keen on brim. But brim off the beach with broad shoulders and bright eyes, and they're beautiful, really, really lovely. But they're cousins that live in the estuary and around the bridges and dine on mud and all that other stuff, so you can keep them. But the ones that swim along the beach, they're beautiful. And he gets mulloway too. He gets some really, really good mulloway. Salmon, well, you try to avoid them, but, you know, you can't at times because they come along in big schools and just clean up everything that's in front of them.
It's the Big Fish. We're speaking with Stinker about the limitless beach fishing options. And you've got Stockton Beach as one of the rare ones in New South Wales where you're allowed to drive along. You've got the beach north of Hawke's Nest where you're allowed to drive along as well. But you need special permits, don't you?
You do. Port Stephens Council. Not for the one over the other side. That's Mid Coast Council. But the one at Stockton, that's Port Stephens Council. And I noticed the other day they're being sold. The permits are being sold from the service stations. So there's a couple of service stations at Anna Bay that sell permits, and make sure you've got them. And be very respectful because a lot of Aboriginal land out there as well. So it's a great place. It does get very busy at Christmas. I mean, I keep away from the joint. And you've got to be respectful for when you're driving. And a lot of people who with a new four-wheel drive have never driven on the beach before can get into all sorts of trouble because they immediately think, if you buy a four-wheel drive, well, you can't get bogged. Well, I've got some bad news for you. You sure can get bogged in a four-wheel drive, especially if the sand is soft. If the sand is soft, down you go, and that's where you're going to stay. So, but there's other beaches. Now, there are other beaches north of Stockton that are great fishing, but you can't take your vehicle on it. But it doesn't matter because they're close or an easy access anyway. But 1 Mile Beach is a beautiful beach. There's a caravan park there and accommodation. 1 Mile. And then there's a place called Middle Rock. And that then joins on to Samurai Beach. Now, Samurai Beach is a nudist beach. So don't be surprised if you run around and see people without their duds on. And make sure you're getting plenty of cream on your nose. And because there's good fishing to be had on both those beaches, but really the two, what I consider to be the best, the prime fishing beaches, Stockton Beach, which I just mentioned, and my beach, Fingal. Fingal Beach is, it's only relatively small beach in comparison to others, but the amount of fish that are caught there, there's people who come here and stay in the Fingal Beach caravan park year after year after year, and what they do, they wander across the road to the surf club, then around the beach, and they catch their own worms. There are worms on Fingal Beach, and then they set up like I explained earlier, with their white conduit pipe, and sit themselves down and wait for the fish to catch themselves. A lot don't realise that fish are very, very good at catching themselves. They're of the belief that you must, when you cast out, you've got to have your finger on the line and wait for that nibble, nibble, nibble. If then you get all excited and you get a flood of adrenaline and you're just waiting. And, of course, most people can't handle that, so they strike well before the fish is really having a good feed. So forget all that. Forget the whole lot. And just put a pipe into the ground, into the sand, or in the rod holder. Put a rod in there and sit back and relax. And don't jump up every time you see the tip of the rod twitch, because that's simply a twitch. But wait until it bends over, and if your drag is set right, you'll get that really running sound of the reel starting to spin. Then he's hooked, and he's hooked himself. So don't think you're a gentle angler. The best ones at catching fish are fish themselves. And then you just hold your rod, pull your rod out of the rod holder, hold it up, and start to wind. But if a fish is going in the opposite direction, well, there's pointless winding. Just wait until it stops and starts to come your way, then wind. So there's really nothing in it, really. Just got to control your enthusiasm. And that's a hard thing to do, Scott.
It is.
It's not a thing to do.
Have the whiting moved in yet, Stinker? They are on the beaches now?
They are. They've arrived in big numbers. And the way I know is because friends of mine swim every morning with goggles along the beach, and then they give me a report of what they see. Now, they said, one bloke told me there a week and a half ago, he said, just down in front of my house, he said, there's a huge school of whiting. He said, if you go down there, he said, with worms on the rising tide, before any of the surfboard riders and everyone else turns up, he said, you'll catch your bag limit of whiting without any trouble at all. And there's another trick with whiting too. They will bite into the night. Now, you rarely ever hear about whiting fishermen or fishers that go into the night. Well, they bite like beauties in the night. And one of the best catches of whiting I've ever had is down here on Fingal Beach, fishing into after sundown. So just because the sun's gone doesn't mean the whiting have.
Oh, Stinky, you've got me very excited. No better fish to eat and no better fun than fishing the beach, and the safest thing you can ever do. Oh, boy, those big summer whiting, they're on. That means summer's here, Stinker.
Summer's here, all right. I mean, as soon as you've got a beach, if you've got to concentrate on any beaches over the Christmas break, they're the best too. Stockton and Fingal on this side, and if you're over the other side, Hawk's Nest, Little Gibber. Oh, look, the options are endless. And stay safe, stay on the beach, and you won't get into trouble.
Good advice. Tight line, Stinker.
Hooray, Scott.
This is The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
It's The Big Fish, and our man on Sydney Harbour from the flyboat, Stephen Gaynor. Welcome back.
How are you, Scott?
You've got a bee in your bonnet about social media. I guess if you don't want people to catch all the fish at your spot, then don't post it, Stephen.
I just think it's a discussion we have to have, because we need someone like Rex Hunt to come along and change the culture, I guess.
Well, if you want to protect your spots, then you can tell people how you do it and give them a general ballpark of where you are. But you're certainly, you're saying that people are posting and then all of a sudden there's a massive crowd on that spot.
Yeah, definitely. And look, I think it's never really been an issue, but with the kingfish stocks, I don't know what the stocks are like across the nation or, you know, up and down the coast, but I know locally the kings have been very bad this year. And we get one school that comes in straight away, someone posts it, they're getting hammered. They don't have a chance. Now, I know I sound like a hypocrite and I'm a charter and I make money from this, but I just think we need to have a discussion about the future of how we're going to manage it, because the fish don't stand a chance, Scott, and especially in a city of 5 million people, everyone's fishing, posting. I don't know. We got to have a talk.
Yeah, so the scenario will be there's a school of kingfish at X marks the spot. someone will video it and show the fish, and then boom, they're like flies on a pie. They're down there straight away.
Yeah, which, look, mate, you know, everyone deserves to catch fish. I'm not against that. I just want to ask the question about how we can change the culture so everyone can catch a fish and you know, the fish have a chance as well.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a fair enough thing if that sort of social media is having that sort of impact on fish in local places. It's The Big Fish with Stephen Gaynor from The Fly Boat. He's a fly fishing purist, if you will, and he's just been on a fly fishing adventure to the Emerald Isle, to Ireland.
Yes. Yeah, that was epic, mate. Me and my 9-year-old daughter, we tend to go back every 18 months, and this time she was old enough to do a lot of fishing with me. And I must say, mate, she outfished me on the trout, but I got her on the salmon, so that's all that matters.
Where did you go? What did you do? Take us through it.
Look, I've got family all over the place, so I sort of based myself in the Midlands in a town called Ballymattan, and I was fishing in the River Innie most afternoons, and, you know, just getting, look, it's a really tough time there, July in Ireland for trout. They really start to go off about May, and July it's peak season, there's too much, the water's too warm. But look, we had a good fish, and I was very lucky. We had a bit of rain there, so a few of the famous salmon rivers went into space, and I got a few good days on the river, which was pretty special, I must say.
Gee, that's the secret, isn't it? Just add water, and all of a sudden those giants from the Atlantic bite. I spent a bit of time fishing in Ireland myself, and the loch that I was fishing was full of salmon, full of sea trout, and the gilly said, "Oh, you won't have a chance, sonny." I don't know why I'm doing a Scottish accent. I was supposed to be Irish, but he knew, but it was still fun. You know, we got a couple of tugs, but as soon as that rain comes, for some reason, they go on the bite, don't they? It's a bizarre thing, but if it lines up, there are plenty of good fish in Ireland still.
Look, it's probably some of the best salmon fishing in Europe, but in saying that, Scott, you know, the river I was fishing, I'm not going to mention any names, but 5 years ago they had 5,000 fish going through the fish counter, and this year they were at 500. So, yeah, look, salmon fishing, it's under a lot of pressure. You know, I'd hate to be a guide, a gilly in Scotland, mate. They'll go all season without touching a fish. You know, can you imagine looking at your client day in, day out and go, yeah, well, that's fishing.
Yeah, that's right. That's interesting, the counter too, isn't it? That was I was down on the Ring of Kerry, so you're up much further north, but I was down in the south, and a place called Waterville, and there was a short stream that runs into a giant lock. Oh, it was, you know, a beautiful, beautiful lake, and the gilly lived in a little white traditional cottage just overlooking the lock, and we were drifting through and casting a big two-handed rod with a team of little wet flies, and I got a couple of pulls, and he said, there are X amount of salmon and sea trout in here, you know, 1,000 or something. And I said, how do you know that? He said, there's a laser counter, so they come through a turnstile, which is incredible to know, isn't it? It just made me think, well, I've got a chance, even though there hadn't been a spate, which is a rise in water.
Yeah, you need that rise in water. That changes everything. You know, I was lucky. Three days of full spate, quite high river. I have to say, though, I did land. I lost a good fish. Like, it was a monster. It jumped, and I'm pulling the fly line. I couldn't get, and there was nothing there. And I thought, wow, well, that's my salmon fishing. You know, you hear about this, you get one swirl on the fly and that's all over. But 10 minutes later, mate, this fish bloody grabbed onto this fly, and it was the most terrifying fight of my life. I actually didn't enjoy it at all. I was so terrified I was going to lose the fish that I was like, mate, don't talk to me. Anyway, I got it in the net, the best feeling ever. And then half a bottle of Jameson later, I wasted a whole day salmon fishing the next day.
You let it swim away. Was it a nice fresh fish or a kelt?
It was a beautiful fresh fish. It was solid. It was silver. It was, look, we didn't measure it, but it was, you know, between 12 and 14 pounds. I'd never seen anything like it, mate. I was over the moon, and the celebration that night was just epic. But I do regret it because I wasted a whole day the next day not fishing.
Were you walking the bank or fishing out of one of those traditional
clinker boats? Walking the bank, and just, mate, it's the most methodical fishing you've ever, you know, it's just cast across the bank, let it swing, and you are fishing every inch of that river, do you know what I mean? And then you take one step forward, cast it out, let it swing again. I guess, you know, there's a lot of skill to it, the variable of slowing the fly down, speeding the fly up, Are you skimming it across the surface? We were using sink tips because the water was quite high. But, you know, and you do, you feel those bangs, and they don't connect, but the rod just bends, and you go, whoa, this is special. This is special, and it's about to happen. And then 6 hours later, it does happen.
Did you have a gilly by your side?
I had a very, very good friend of mine who's probably the most experienced salmon fisherman around. So I'm just very lucky, mate. Like, salmon comes down to who you know, not what you know.
A beautiful way to fish, isn't it? Were you using a big double-hander?
No, it was a single-hander. It was 11-foot, 7-weight single-hander. But, mate, it all comes down to efficiency. You know, you are fishing every inch of that river. You know, you're going down and across. You know, then you move forward half a metre, a metre, fish down and across. Down and across, and you're just swinging. And then I guess the skill is knowing when to speed the fly up, which is kind of, you know, letting your hand follow the fly down a bit faster, or holding your hand back up, or sorry, your arm, you know, holding that rod, slowing the fly down. Again, I'm nowhere near experienced enough to sort of make great comments on that, but it is super exciting. And mate, when they bite, it's phenomenal, and they're jumping and they're strong. You know, they're straight in from the Atlantic. They're really, really strong. They fight hard. Yeah, it's awesome.
Just marvellous, mate. Just marvellous. Well, and just quickly, what's biting and jumping and fighting hard on Sydney Harbour for our big fish listeners? Don't have to be too specific after your rant about the too much Facebook.
No, look, that's my rant about that. I just think it's a discussion we have to have. But
rant was over egging it a bit. You know, just a discussion, as you said. You're not ranting. I retract that previous statement, Your Honour.
No, Scott, you're entitled to say it, mate. I feel like the biggest hypocrite in the world even talking about it because, you know, I get my business out of social media. But in terms of that, let's talk about Sydney Harbour. It's been a very quiet winter, but we're starting to get the rackings in, which is really good for my business. Like fly fishing, catching kingfish, that's what it's all about. But yeah, the variety is just starting to come in. The water temperature's creeping up. Very different year to last year. We had, you know, 23 degrees water off Sydney in October last year, where it was 19 a week and a half ago. And it's creeped up this week. But yeah, mate, the harvest's starting to happen. We've still got salmon hanging around. We're getting kingfish in. I'm starting to feel good. It's going to be a good season.
Then those jumbo salmon that have been running, I mean, those fish, some of them getting close to 10 pound. They are as good as any I think they're as good as any kingfish. I know kingfish are iconic and all the rest, but gee, those big salmon, they are magnificent.
Oh, mate, they go harder than the kingfish when they're that size. The only thing they don't do is, you know, do the dirty fight, go for structure. But like pound for pound to power ratio, yeah, absolutely as good as kingfish.
Yeah, marvellous fish to catch on the fly particularly, but you'd need at least an 8-weight. I did catch on a 6-weight once, and, you know, I got it, but it was such a long fight and so hard to get any purchase on the fish. You need at least an 8-weight, don't you?
Yeah, look, at the minimum 8-weight, and that's for the rats. And, like, if you hook into anything bigger than 70, you know, you're going to be back in that position going, oh, boy, you know, I'm following the fish around. If he goes left, I've got him. If he goes right, there's no stopping them. Yeah, like, there's a lot of luck with kingfish on fly. That's what I tell people. Like, I've landed some big fish, you know, over a metre. So that's only because they went left. If they went right, I didn't have a chance.
That's right, yeah. You know, and like, I think an 8-weight's a good compromise. 10's are pretty big, and you know, I know the newer ones are, and the more expensive ones are quite light. 6-weight's too small. 7-weight's too small. Six. But I think 8-weight's pretty versatile, isn't it, for what you do?
I use 8-weight for rackings and salmon. That's my go-to. 10 I'll use on a sinking line if I know there's some bigger fish around. Generally, if they're not on the surface, you'll get the bigger ones, you know, dropping that fly right down to the bottom and dredging it up. So I'll use a 10 for those. But yeah, look, an 8-weight's pretty good. You won't go wrong. Yeah. And I must say, you know, a good reel as well.
Yeah, that's right. You need one with decent drag. You've got to spend a bit of money so that you can play the fish off the reel. But, yeah, that method, there's not too much casting with that dredging them deep with the big squid fly, is there really, compared to chasing them on the surface? So that's probably not going to wreck your arm too much.
No, it's not. And some people don't, you know, they consider that cheating. But, you know, I just love catching fish. I don't care how I get them.
No, that works. That's well. You got to sort of chuck it out. That's a bit of a chuck and duck. But
in fairness, Scott, there's a whole art form to wiggling that line out the end of the rod tip and letting it sink down. There's an art form in that, because if you just stuff the whole fly line out and let it sink down in the ball, you will bring up the biggest knot you've ever brought in your life. You know, and there's a speed and efficient way of getting that line out so it sinks down.
Yes,
you know?
The old vertical cast, Stephen Gaynor. Thanks for telling us about your Irish sojourn and catching a 14-pound Atlantic salmon and letting it go to spawn and hopefully bring more to the river. It's a lovely story.
Oh, no worries, Scott. And, as always, mate, great to speak to you and hopefully see you on the water very soon.
Get out of it, bloody seagulls.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.